Join us for today's episode of the Utopian Realities Slope Save Life on Planet Earth Blog Talk Radio Show, bringing you solution bearers with practical, proven, scientific ways to help you eliminate global level irradiation and extinction level threats from your body and bringing forward the means to restore and sustain global waters, air, soil, and sentient life. Welcome. Greetings, this is Siava, coming to you from the homelands, heaven on Mother Earth lands of the White Buffalo Nation in Nueva Segovia, also known as Crescent Valley, where we coexist simultaneously as a tribal reserve in alliance adopted by Chief Geronimo Thomas Longender Fur of the Mendocino Indian Reserve. Much respect to all my relations who will be listening to this program. Tonight begins a series of programs called Mending the Hoop, Special Words That Need to Be Heard. We have some pre-recorded interviews and material that need to be heard, which don't fit in to the live Mending the Hoop Council on Saturdays. So I'm going to upload some amazing material here that you need to hear. If you're willing, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So if you choose to drink, I'm going to be playing some things I think are very important. Included in today's sharing of Elders' Wisdom, we will be listening to a recording I did recently of Alex Whiteplume. It was a conversation with the physicist and free woman Dana Dudley and Chad Edwards of Gaia. And again, I will just apologize. This was a recording that was done. They were all on the phone, and I recorded into Audacity on my computer. So my volume is louder than everyone else's, and not a good enough editor to figure out how to fix that. In addition, we'll be starting with an audio, which is the first segment of a book called The Great Matriarch by Meredith Quinn. It's a seminal work by the late Musa, the international legal advisor to Wounded Knee. And we're also going to be listening to some classic Victor Duville, the star knowledge keeper from Syntyfleska University, that was done 4 years ago in April on a very special trip that I took with the late chief of the Fire Lightning Geospea, my brother, Gary Rowland Sr. And we're also going to be hearing some music. Feel free to call in and share your heart song and wisdom as Great Spirit moves you. This is a one-take wonder production. Like life, you only get one take of each moment. So let's all give it our best for Wankantanka and Unchimaka, and hopefully we will all choose good over evil and life over death. And as I said, we are going to begin with the very first section of the great matriarch, Agnes Strikehead, the last great matriarch of the Dakota Nation, and the grandmother of the late Meredith Quinn Musa. This is part one. It is 5 minutes and 50 seconds, and then I will be back. The Great Matriarch, Agnes Strikehead, by Musa. Introduction. Who is Agnes Strikehead? What great act did she do that made her the great matriarch? Is there legal references or documentation to her identity? Let's begin by United States court history, which is a function of a country that has no royal family bloodlines and is not permitted to have any. The decision from the case, Carroll versus Pathkiller, classified all American Indians that follow Aboriginal tribal government of ancient times of women of the clan that select chiefs to speak on their behalf as a nation to be kings and queens, and the offspring to be of this same bloodline. This was updated on January 17, 1975, by Judge Erborn in the case United States versus Consolidated Wounded Knee Cases, when he stated, and he was talking to 65 Indians trying to prove their sovereignty, quote, "We cannot bring the caucus omissus in the law or a treaty," end quote. So Agnes Strikehead has the royal bloodline because she believed the ancient system of government and was born in exile because of it. There were two major armies. One, Indians, who had taken on an autonomy government, automatically making them nationals of the United States, and two, the army representing the United States, who were trying to make my grandmother's parents, as part of a tribal unit, to let the U.S. nationals to speak on behalf of signatories to make and sign a treaty with the United States under threat of death that drove her parents into exile. All these historical events are well documented by the Department of Interior and the Department of War. How these events are presented in history, everyone has some idea how the systems, example, of propaganda works in Russia, China, or Iraq, or even North Vietnam. Well, the United States is no different when it comes to American Indian issues. What great act did she do to make her the great matriarch? She produced a grandson with her bloodline and her clan, who was commissioned by her to carry on a quest to present the event, being born in exile, which was a violation of international law, which has not been resolved to this day before an international tribunal. If one were to make an inquiry into the United States Justice Department, they would be told there are more millions spent keeping track of her grandson than all Indian activists of the 1960s to 1970s. Her grandson is classified as a troublemaker, and more millions were spent to send him to prison as a political prisoner than the deficit for the city of Buffalo, New York, for the budget of 1993 and part of 1994. The alleged federal criminal charges could never take a review by an international tribunal because the real issue the United States had to stop from opening up was 80% of all tribal funds and revenues were leaving the United States for another country or nation that had nothing to do with American culture problems or issues. That $1 trillion was known to have been sent. One, American Indians had no knowledge of this issue, and two, the United States had never been given permission by a referendum vote by all the Indians in the United States to send their money other places. Indians are fighting just to get a few food stamps to eat. The court sentences totaling 20 years was in hopes that her grandson would rot and die in prison, just like Geronimo and others did. But her grandson hit it lucky and was able to writ himself out of prison after 31 months.
the United States knows her grandson can sit down and write a document that will overcome any Indian problem on any Indian reservation. But he knows legally, as well as traditionally, once an Indian is a national of the United States, they will never care to become a signatory again. The grandson knows the tribal prophecies have said this 1,000 years ago.
And that is section one. Next program, we will hear the next section. Now, in lieu of an opening prayer, I'm going to play a song written by Siava.
Great Spirit, when you called, I answered, set my life upon the line. Walk the path of fire, spinning, spinning, spinning on a web so fine. Please, Father, don't fail me on this vision quest. Set my sights upon you, gambled all upon your name, your faithfulness and promise, my only gain. Great Spirit, hear me calling for clarity and truth. Your child, your bride, beloved, calling out to you. You put me on a journey, listening to your voice. Turn left, turn right at your word. Surrender my only choice. Great Spirit, don't fail me on this vision quest. Set my sights on you, your faithfulness and promise, my only fame. Freedom as a rose, courage in the heart, casting aside the ways of the world, seeking only you. Great Spirit, do not fail us on this vision quest. Answer the riddles of my heart as you put us to the test. I have no outer wealth, no power and no pomp. I've sought you in the meadows, amidst the flowers romp. I've danced on mountain grasses and loved you in the sky. Great Spirit, in your promises I live and I will die. Oh, Great Spirit, all is you, and all the earth is yours. Earth, water, wind, and fire emanate from you. You lead me to the chasm, I stand upon the cliff, and trust that when I take the leap, I'll rise upon your wind. Do not fail us on this vision quest. We set our sights on you, your faithfulness and promise, our only wealth.
Siava, thank you again for joining us. We're now going to move into listening to the first part of what is a three-part series with Victor Duville, the Star Knowledge Keeper, who I first heard speak at the Water Lily Treaty Council at Braveheart Lodge. And I was on a quest when I was invited out to the heart of Unchimaka. My goal was to be like a midwife for the rebirth of the Ocheti Sakowin and to restore the matriarchal sovereignty under the white buffalo calf woman in alliance with the peacemaker, who one could say is her chief in the spirit world. And so I asked Victor Duville if Gary Rowland and I could come and speak to him. And we drove from Wounded Knee to Rosebud, to Sinta Kalyska University. And Victor was kind enough to sit down with us, and I believe I had a digital recorder. And there's a wonderful picture of Chief Gary Rowland that I will add to this program, because he is, you know, he's very much still with us. I feel his spirit here. What a good man. And we had such a nice, nice afternoon at Sinta Kalyska University, which is such an inspiration. And with that, I want to say some special words of love to Marge Grow Eppard and the trustees of DQ University. And in case you didn't know, DQ stands for the true name of the peacemaker. So here, my friends and family, is part one of a conversation between Siava, Lisa Wolf Wright, and Victor Duville, and Gary Rowland Sr. on April 3rd, 2017. Again, I apologize in advance. I cleaned up the audio. There was a lot of background noise, and I hope that Chief Victor's words can be heard. And also, this is a 23-minute piece, and then I will be back. Enjoy. I'm passing the feather to Chief Victor.
Interested in the system that we have. We have a system called Kyuksa, which is a group that at one time intermarried. They were in alliance with the Ojibwa. And they intermarried with them. And they adopted this cross-cut marriage. So one band, the mother band, which was the Isuna Tiriko, that group intermarried. So they, because they violated the system that we had, the northern groups that had the cross-cut marriage, because of the people's up there. So it was a conflict between the group itself, but the parent band is the one that married into that. And eventually they were called Kyuksa, which means marriage breakers, breakers of the... And eventually our tribe divided along those lines, the one that wanted and one that didn't want it. And there was kind of a social civil war within. And eventually that's what caused our groups to migrate out of Minnesota, because they get away from that. But in the clan system, it's a little bit different, because you can't marry anybody in the same clan, same sign. Usually in the practicing of recognizing kin, usually the cross cousins move away. which means a para, because we had no such thing as para cousins, a para relationship, because they were integrated as family. So, but the original was a matrifocal system where, much like Iroquois, we traced our lineage from the mother side. And, but that started breaking up. But there's something about where you live where it's going to bring the division among the Apache folk and Apache folk. So in the women's area where they lived, they didn't really have to labor a lot to farm because nature reinforced all that. It helped. But once you got out of that area, then it shifted to male. So all throughout our learning about our solar system, so we get to realize that it changes throughout time. And trying to get give you a good idea to study that.
And there's one I don't have that I wanted to get you, and it was too big. It's called the Dakota Proclamation.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been doing the, I've been working with the workshop, and he gave me the copy of that, the doctrine. So I've been integrating my classroom systems where we're trying to seek a way of breaking off from the old Anglo-Saxon laws.
Yes.
And trying to go back to traditional. So I got that, and we did a number of the Doctrine of Discovery. That's the one we've been showing. It's online, too. You can get that online. But it there it defines all the legal terms of Anglo-Saxon. And the church is the one that promotes that. And now we have separation of church and state. So we're trying to seek means of doing that and using our traditional government, because the government we have is the IRA government, which is not the right kind. And,
you're not giving this to me, are you?
No. I'm trying to give you the copy. But you can get that online.
Okay.
If you get that, it's... Wolfchild, Sheldon Wolfchild, and you get a Doctrine of Discovery, that's all there. If you contact him, he'll send you a free copy.
Okay. Yeah. Because in order to to claim sovereignty, you have to have the right form, or they won't recognize it.
Yeah, that is what we've been struggling to get that traditional government in there, and because we all adapted to the IRA government. We still have treaty groups out there that didn't sign into that.
And I understand there's a difference between treaties and treatises.
Yes, yeah.
You know about that?
Yeah.
And that the treaties, if the clan mothers weren't behind them, then the treaties aren't really treaties.
Yeah.
And they can break them.
Yeah.
They're simply treatises.
Well, right now we got a GMO status, some that have that. We got one sitting there. We have a desk over in Geneva. And we have our traditional government base there. And so we're trying to draw strength from that.
So I was right to reach out to you. You were the right person.
Yeah. So we're really interested in... I used to belong to the Treaty Council, but it's a puppet. It's a puppet dictated by tribal council. And, that's why I got off the treaty, the council. We're trying to establish one where we go back to lineal descendants that signed the treaties. And my grandfather, Shooting Cat, is one that signed some of the treaties. So we're trying, he was even all the officers in there to go back to the legitimacy of who the signers were.
And do you know who the clan mothers were?
Yeah.
You do?
Right there, that was they call her medicine woman. She was the wife of Shooting Cat.
Oh my goodness.
And she kept a perfect household, and within her she really groomed the boys there to lead.
So you know that the word savage actually means those who live amongst the trees.
Yeah.
and as a compliment.
Yeah. So we're, that is the, our lifelong dream is to go back to a traditional government if we get everybody on the same page. But we have all battlefields out there because of self-interest groups. A lot of our people are being acculturated, so they now don't really think trees are the right way, right path. But we're trying
is
to,
it true that the, in 408 AD, that when the Visigoths were defeated,
mm-hmm.
that the chief, that North and South America, the Americas Empire, that the chief clan mother for the Americas was Dakota,
yeah.
and that they were there and signed
yeah.
that treaty, that is true.
Yeah.
And that's the ultimate strength,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
And then that in 1491, the British gave their land title back to the Romans,
yeah.
and then in 1492, and that's what gave rise to Columbus being
yeah.
ciphered as a pirate,
yeah. Yeah.
and all that is true.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're attempting to open that. But we've done a lot of groundwork because I teach a lot of tribal government stuff. We're trying to go back and open a path so people have an understanding of where we came from.
Are you willing to speak on the air about this? I do this, I think I told you, I've been doing this radio program
yeah.
since August called Standing with Standing Rock, Savage
yeah.
Sovereignty.
Yeah.
You will?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I could probably get involved in that as I'm already trying to expand out and push that movement to get that to be accepted. And if we get enough in there, we're trying to get the Pope to try to reverse
yes.
those papal bulls that came out. And
then all the land returns
yeah.
to...
And then we'll be on equal legal field with the United States. That's what they're trying to do. And, the man looks like the right person who we still... it's going to be hard to look at. But that's the ultimate goal is to... Because we ran out of options, the courts. Because Dr. Sinfoy and the Black has been shut down now. It only goes one way. And so our dream is to open up that if we could get the Pope to renounce those doctrines, we'll be able to get that on the same footing internationally. As
yeah.
the international people have already sided with us. It's just that they don't have power to push.
Well, I understand that all the wealth of
yeah.
the Vatican actually
yeah.
is owed to the tribes.
Yeah.
Is that your understanding
yeah.
too?
Yeah. Yeah, so the income, the energy system that imposed on the tribes of South Russia extended out to northern tribes. So we were nothing but the stepping stone.
Well, I understand first they
yeah.
murdered all the European
yeah.
tribes to wipe out the record
yeah.
before they came over here.
Yeah. But that's really, we try to seek a understanding of how we can go. The problem here on the Rosebud, most of the Lakota reservations, is that we have incomplete nuclear family that are really high, roughly about 40-50%. If we get the families to function, get it back on the same page, then we'll go back to a matrilineal system, a matrifocal. But it's kind of hard at this stage because it's broken families.
Can it be done spiritually to replace, since you can't trace necessarily?
Well,
can it be done through
yeah,
ceremony?
The important ingredient is to get spirituality back in. That's why we're so willing to go out and promote that star knowledge, which we are able to show that life forms are God-given, that we communicate with the above below.
Everything they're trying to do with their technologies
yeah.
done spiritually, naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one of our main goals.
And I'm here
yeah.
at your service.
Yeah.
But this is why I'm here.
Yeah.
Is for this work.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest problems that we're trying to get them to honor a tree we've got to health. Because the Rosebud health system fell and fallen apart. it's stripped of all the funding and in-house fighting, and so we have to, it's, Rosebud has a large referral service. You got a multi-million dollar complex, yet they cannot do operations. They don't have the doctors to fill those positions, and so they have to refer them to Sioux Falls, or San Francisco, and Rapid City. So we have to travel there whenever doctors. So we cannot go on our own to see doctors because we have to have referral system within that. You know, they got. But that's one of the treaty requirements that they reneged on. So we have a lot of issues out there trying to get them to obligate the treaty systems, and people like Trump, they're taking all that power away. The budgeting, the funding, and so we're at a point where we have to go back to something. It's to reform the government, maybe go back to natural social type, and then get them to honor treaties, because...
So have you chosen your clan mother yet?
We haven't yet, because we're... I'm trying to get... one thing we did, though, I brought all in my grandchildren. Have a large house. I brought in all my grandchildren, my great grandchildren. I'm raising all of them because they're one side are like my son-in-law and daughter. They all died, and the other ones they couldn't find jobs. So I got them all in. I got 19 living in my house.
Oh.
So that's the beginning of
yes.
the traditional way that
yes, long house.
We have these clan homes with maybe four or five families in there. Some. Trying to raise them the best I can, and yet I'm not getting any help.
My mission, I mean, and I think I don't know if I told you why I'm so audacious to, my youngest daughter was born in a barn in the Star in Wisconsin near where Miracle had been born. We were sent from a community we were living in Arizona, and creator said, go do this. I didn't have any idea what or why. So I'm the White Buffalo Nation is our organization. I'm here. I think I gave you a card as a Free Nations ambassador and UN observer. So people will support.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, they've been sending money for me so I can drive around and stuff. But we can, because that's what we're here to support, what you're doing. And we'll ask. What I like to do is tell people where their donation will go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, because I don't want to be raising help and then have somebody go off gambling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No, it has to go for the, you know, reestablishment of the nation, but expenses for the household, those are all legitimate. I'm so relieved, Victor.
Yeah. I spend my lifetime working since 1970. My wife works at that, so her and I, we're on Social Security, so that's how we can afford to raise our own grandchildren, and we're not getting any help, and I don't want help because we want to do it together, but we have to get our system here, to get the family system functioning. One of the things that in tribal government we found that if you're ground-based, which is the clan mothers, and the clan system, if they lay a good foundation, that's what the tribal government, the template of the tribal government runs on that.
And it holds internationally. It will it will stop the black snake. It will stop Trump.
That's what we're trying to rebuild, reform the families. It's hard because even the tribal council, they want that agenda. They want to control.
They want to keep getting the money.
They want to control and get the money. They don't want a functional government, a family system, because they will dictate. So they turned their backs on the ask for tribal reform, social reform. But we're gradually getting, we had the government reformed. And at Rosebud, there's kind of a miracle that came, because our government was based on a district system. We want to go back to the old Jewish by our community government. We had 21 traditional communities there, and that was taken apart into districts. Finally, that we had a government reform that people still passed. They wanted all the communities to be equal. So we got some of the larger communities, like one of the communities that here at Antelope, it usually has 3,000 people, as opposed to another one in Woods, South Dakota, which only has 6 families. So it's less than 500. So the tribal council usually picks representative, so they overload the representative more than the small ones. So now we're on the same page where we have got all the communities equal power. So that's a miracle that was done, and they did the groundwork for it. Now we can go to reform a lot better. But all the years I've been teaching here, I seem to kind of reinvent the wheel. You take 2 steps forward and 3 steps backwards. And, it's because the tribal government, it follows to the wishes of the government. We have to get off paternalism, the idea that it's hard.
So we need to bring more sustainable businesses here.
That is what needs to be done. We need to begin to have a sustainable economy, which our original chiefs wanted. When they came here, they looked at this place, said, the only way we can run a sustainable type of system is to have, to convert kind of ranching style. We have buffalo, we'll be able to run them, and horses, we'll have rather than farm. That never happened. I said, you will farm. So I'll show you how. So the original chiefs were right. You go back to a sustainable economy. And my uncle, one of his sons at started the University of Stanley Redbird, he was all for the sustainable economy. He was able to get home housing. And then he got into a project where he got rabbits. He was in other wild fowls, like the turkey. The rabbits he saw were abundant, so we could use them. We can take fur from them, make clothing. And there would be a sustainable way of doing things.
I like hemp too.
And then he had a turkey ranch where the human wild, and that goes so we can hunt them. Now he was looking for maybe deer or buffalo that we can. We've got 500 buffalo on the tribe, not about that much, so we're trying to build a herd. We need more land, which land's being diminished. It's a whole, when we look down the line, it's a whole lot of tasks that we before us. And my lifetime is running short, and I've got other people take over as I retire back to our family, rebuild that family system. But we got some people with the way I do things out there. I'm going to get them all involved too, and it's hard because they're all unemployed. They live on that fixed income. If we're able to get the family run back on its feet, we'll be able to go back to the old Jewish life system. We all share things, and it's usually about 4 cars gave them to my kids. They use them. And they run errands for us, so we share about things. Nothing's really mine there. My car I got there. The kids take it whenever they have to go get grocery stuff. So everything is shared in the house. So everything, if you put something down, you better watch it. We share everything within that. All 19 of us in the family, all not more unemployed, but they do things for me. I go and leave my car there with you. Flat, they do it. They fix it. The things they can do. Again, it's hard because life is pretty rough here. Unemployment's high. But still, I'm not really looking for monetary. I'm looking for more of a sharing type of economy. I've always found that when I first came or married, before I got married, I lived singly, and And when I didn't have a job, we got annuities or commodities. And I found that you cannot make it alone unless you hook up and make a share of these. It goes a long ways if maybe you have four people put in a pot once you get commodities. And eventually we got married, had a larger family, then that came easy. We were able to do a lot of things in that area. But that is one of the economies that we're trying to push. But again, it's difficult
right.
Because we're locked into the welfare system.
Yes.
It's bad because the welfare here controls all the homes. So my furnace broke down. I couldn't get one. So I went to the housing, they wouldn't give me any. So I told them, I can buy one from you guys. I said, I can make up $2,000 maybe in several months and you can help me get one. Which is, no, we cannot take your money because this is a poverty fund. If we get the money, we lose our poverty status. That's the type of mentality they have about that. So I have to go back and deal with the whites in downtown to get that last thing I wanted because they'll make the money off of it. But I learned to do furnace work too, so I get able to get that. So I ran this whole 2 inches without the furnace. Trying to build chimneys and stuff. You got to go back and go back to the basics. That's really what we lack. The technology is only good if you find some sensible use to it. Like this, you know, the flash drives. I no longer buy books. This used to be all full of books.
I know, me too.
Yeah, and I got most of my stuff.
Concludes part one of a three-part conversation with the Star Knowledge Keeper, Victor Duville, recorded on April 3rd, 2017 at Cinta Gleska College in Rosebud, also present but silent like a good scout, the late, great Gary Rowland. Let's have a special moment of remembrance for all of our family who is crossed over right now. We hope to see you soon. They say that the ghost dancers will be coming back across the Great Divide. And I look forward to shaking the hand of my brother, Chief Fire Lightning, who adopted me as his sister. And now I am Lakota. And now, before we move on to the portion of our program that features the recent conversation with Chief Alex White Plume of Keysa Park, husband of the late, great Deborah White Plume, who I also hope to be seeing soon when the ancestors cross over the Great Divide and come back to this land. I'm going to play a song that is dedicated to Wallawankantanka. And this is a song by Siava, c'est moi. It's called The Danger Zone. And thank you for listening to Mending the Hoop. Special words that need to be heard, a one-take wonder production in conjunction with Chief Geronimo and the Mendocino Tribal Reserve and all the renewed sovereign original nations of Turtle Island and of Mother Earth for the people of the four directions, white, black, yellow, red. If you're here for the mending of the sacred hoop and the healing of the earth, welcome home. The White Buffalo Nation welcomes all the true-hearted, good children of Great Spirit. Now, the Danger Zone.
Well, I had no idea when I saw you riding down the street and stopped you to see who you be. I was entering the danger zone. Oh, the danger zone. You take me to the danger zone. Well, you came in and we had some tea. And you found out that you liked me. And I found out you made me laugh. And I started to see what you're all about. Oh, you're taking me to the danger zone. And you're taking me to the danger zone. Oh, baby, when I let you in. Oh, baby, I'm gonna do it again. Cause I like you here in the danger zone. I like you here in the danger zone. Well, I was living my life just lock and key. There was nobody to get to me. But I saw your smile. Oh, you made me laugh. And I let you in. And I'm so glad. Cause you're taking me danger zone, and we walk in there. Oh, baby, how you make me feel. I can't believe this is real. Oh, it feels so good. It's the danger zone. And suddenly, I don't feel so alone. How did it happen? So surprised. Oh, but it was so nice this morning when I opened my eyes. On the danger zone, it's a nice place to be. In the danger zone, you and me. Baby, 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 baby. Mm-hmm. Oh, baby, baby, baby. Mm-hmm. I don't drive too fast, to drive too slow. Drive just right. Take me home into the danger zone. Into the danger zone. I wanna be there with you in the danger zone. In the danger zone. In the danger zone. Oh, I'm not alone in the danger zone.
Welcome back. This is Siava with One Shot Wonder Productions special Mending the Hoop program, special words that need to be heard. And before we go into our section where you will get to hear the words of the former chairman of Pine Ridge, Alex Whiteplume, the voice of the Standing Silent Nation. I'm going to take a moment to remember all of our brothers and sisters of the Red Nation, the Black Nation, the White Nation, and the Yellow Nation, our two-legged brothers and sisters who are tonight behind bars. Now, personally, as a tribal woman, I feel that the United States of America, while we appreciate their help in dealing with our relatives who have perhaps gone too far in their behavior, sometimes due to laws that are arbitrary and actually designed to entrap people, which is, we generally characterize as the war on drugs. But then there are our political prisoners. And I know it's controversial because, you know, there's a lot of sickness across Turtle Island. There is, I dare say, no home that is untouched by trauma, by addiction, be it to whatever. I mean, I eat food. I smoke cigarettes. I'm not a breatharian. I suppose you could say I'm addicted to food. I'm addicted to sleep. But sometimes, you know, our brothers and sisters, especially with the fire water, which was used to make men of the original nations sign treaties, such as the Treaty of Fort Laramie, which apparently a big wagon of booze was rolled into the treaty grounds where all the men were. And then everybody was given all the fire water they could drink. And then they passed out. And then the soldiers, the blue coats, dragged unconscious men of red heritage with signing authority for their wives, for the Casus Emissus, who does not appear but is stands for Great Spirit, the original mother, the womb of life from which we all emerge. The men were dragged unconscious and pens were put in their hand or their fingerprints were put on the Treaty of Fort Laramie. So back to our brothers and sisters who may in the future be listening to this program from behind bars. I, Siava, as clan mother of the White Buffalo Nation appointed, asked to be such by Great Spirit and trained by Great Spirit to be a hollow bone, a hollow bowl, a chinupa, an empty cup. I am going to read a letter that was sent, was written on November 14th, 2020 to Grandfather Leonard Peltier. It is from Lisa J. Wolf, White Buffalo Nation, Nua Segovia, 3039 Crescent Avenue, Crescent Valley, Nevada, 89821, in case anyone else needs to write a letter to me. November 14th, 2020. If you want to also write to Grandfather Leonard, one of the longest held political prisoners, akin to holding the late president of South Africa. We can name many political prisoners. In any case, this is a letter to Leonard Peltier, number 89637-132, USP Coleman 1, P.O. Box 1033, Coleman, Florida 33521. Hahani washte, Leonard Peltier. I am sorry I have not written sooner. But today, Great Spirit, put it on my heart that it is time to send my love and greetings. I am, for what it is worth, so sorry that you're answering the call and coming to the knee long ago to defend the grandmothers and grandfathers, which was so noble and brave as you protected the Ocheti Sakowin, and that great spirit within you has borne such ignoble treatment. Your being a prisoner of war so long is unbearable for those who love you, and surely I cannot even imagine the pain and agony you have endured, although I trust it has turned you into a spiritual giant. You are a living Tanka, the elder who stands in the fire for all of us before being brought into the lodge. And that, like the Tankas, you ceaselessly carry prayers to the Tankashala. You have been in the fire so long, Leonard Peltier, you are a diamond Tanka to Tanka. I received an understanding many years ago from Unchimaka that she, our mother, is deeply upset at you, her dear, lion-hearted, brave son, her beloved, being held behind bars. And she sees your incarceration as reflective of her own rape and desecration and enslavement, and that she so looks forward to your being free to sit on her hillside, unimpeded by metal bars and concrete walls, free and surrounded by the sky and touched by the wind and rain and serenaded by the songs of the birds. She grieves for you ceaselessly, and your release will for her mark the true possibility of the mending of the hoop broken at Wounded Knee by the original massacre and again by your incarceration. And your release will mark the true unfolding of the healing of the earth, and that as long as you are behind metal bars, her heart is broken. She asked me to ask you to please, please, please continue to pray and stay in your body on this side of the Great Divide. You are most beloved to her, and she thanks you for your service and love, and is always with you. I realize that you are old enough to be my father, Leonard. You graduated school in 1957, the year I was born. And so I hope that you don't mind that I, in my heart, have adopted you as my father. Well, I trust I have said too much, but what I am sharing is no secret. And please tell the authorities there to get some fresh coffee and donuts. And thanks for protecting you and me and all of us. And best regards to whomever besides Leonard reads this letter, as I know you will. And thank you for letting him receive this letter. Unchimaka has told me that she wants you free, and it breaks her heart, and she considers your incarceration truly a symbol for the wrongful abuse of her and the people she loves most dearly, the original people of Turtle Island, who care for her heart. She, my mother, with whom I, like you, am one, asked me to tell you she loves you with all her heart, and if she could set you free, you would have been home long ago. But your incarceration is her incarceration, and the buffalo woman whose armpit I walk beneath and who is one with Unchimaka says she snorts and stomps and wishes she could bring down the walls that hold you. But being that this is the time of positive prophecies being fulfilled, the time of the seventh and eighth generations and the white buffalo calves having been born since 1994, I have hope that the Tonka hearts of the Wasichu will sprout water of compassion, and even those cold-hearted ones who hold you captive will find their hearts return to life and put themselves in your shoes, and the scales will fall from their eyes and hearts, and you will be set free. May you come home soon, Father. The old spiritual song, "Let My People Go," could be sung with you specifically in mind. When Leonard was in U.S. jail, let our Leonard go. Please, prison guards, let our dear Leonard go. Doksha, Father, please write and let me know if I may call you that. Much love, Siava. And now, before we go into our portion of the program, where we hear the conversation with Alex Lightplum, we are going to listen to a song that was written by Siava, and it is an adaptation of some psalms from my lineage, the tribes of Israel, of the Lion, the house of Judah, although I myself, on my father's side, am of the tribe of Benjamin, and I claim on my mother's side the tribe of Lilith, the original woman, the tribal woman who never left the garden, who never fell. So, thank you all for being part of this special evening program of Mending the Hoop Radio, special words that need to be heard. I hope you enjoy the song.
Come now, let us reason together, says the Lord. Your sins are as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they flow red as crimson, they shall be like wool. The mountain of the Lord will be established as highest of the high. Many people will come and cry, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lady. She will teach us her way so we may follow. She will judge between the nations and will settle our disputes. Who will beat our swords to plowshares and our spears to pruning hooks? Wise counselor, mighty good, princess of peace, out of love, great spirits then will be established as highest of the high. Many people will come and cry, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord. He will teach us his ways so we may follow. They will judge between the nations and will settle our disputes. Who will beat our swords to plowshares and our spears to pruning hooks? Come now, let us reason together, says Great Spirit, for your sins are as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they flow red as crimson, they shall be like wool.
Hi, hi. And now, a portion I've been really looking forward to playing for everyone. This is Alex Whiteplume, a phone conversation with Chad Edwards, and Dana Dudley and Ciava. And again, I apologize in advance that my voice is louder than everyone else's, but we will be working that out, but that's how it is for now. So here we go. I think these are really real. I never heard Alex speak about these things, and I'm very grateful to technology that I was able to record this conversation. And I do have permission from Alex, my very dear brother, to play this. I hope you enjoy it. It's 30 minutes.
You're not supposed to have no trauma. And what that does is it weakens your blood. And your blood becomes susceptible to diseases and getting sick. And but anyway, for 100 years, we were in a conquered state of mind. And then the Wounded Knee, the second Wounded Knee happened, 1973. I'm sure you heard about Russell Means and Dennis Day. What they did was they started in our mind a thinking process. Say, hey, we don't really have to be this way. And our language is still here. And one of the things that people need to understand is all Indians are not alike. We're not even Indians. But the people who had 500 years of contact, they're no more. And the ones with 400 years contact, they're no more. Usually 300, they're usually blue-eyed, blonde hair, but they remember their ancient bloodlines. So that's kind of a situation. And we had 228 years of contact this year. And we're still real. Our language is real. We're still practically the same way my grandpa's was 400 years ago. So we want to get back into that original kinship system. And when we say we want to leave our way, America has us as hunter-gatherers. And we're barbaric. We're caveman-like. That's furthest from the truth, because the kinship system is different from socialism. We're not socialism. We're not communists. But it's a different way. It's a real sophisticated, clever way to live together in harmony so that no disasters could happen to us. And but we've been living that way. And, I met my wife in 1979. I came back from Berlin, Germany. I was in the Berlin Brigade with the army in Berlin, Germany, guarding the Iron Curtain where Adolf Hitler was. And I came home, and when I was in Berlin, I'd walk down the street, and there'd be 20, 30 different nationalities all walking, Iranians, Turkish, all different types of people. And I was just amazed at how they had their cultural ways yet and their language. And here on the Pine Ridge, the government policies were forbidden everything that's Lakota. And in 1978 was the first time Congress passed a law to rescind the laws against our spirituality. So 1978 was the first time we could practice our sun dance openly. Before that, it had to be hidden, secret. So we, in a nutshell, that's basically us. We're rebuilding our nation today.
Alex, can I say one thing? Two things, actually. One is, let's remember, as Musa reminds us, that savage means those who live amongst the trees, and it is a good word. It's been made out to be bad. It's a word of power. That it was the word that describes the original peoples on that 408 AD treaty when the Romans were defeated by the Visigoths with the help of actually of the Lakota, Dakota, Nakota royalty at that time, and also that barbarian likewise.
Let me finish my sentence before I forget what I was going to say.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
When you interrupt me, I forget my train of thought. Anyway, the point I was trying to make was in 1973, there was a war amongst our people, amongst the mixed bloods that were colonized. They were better Americans than the Americans themselves. And those of us who spoke Lakota, we were totally mistreated by our own people because we didn't fall in the melting pot. But that went on, and some people died. Two FBI agents were killed. Three members of our tribe were killed during that little war. And so that went on, and it was real violent here from 73 to about 1985. And 1985, my wife had a vision that we had to bring back our grieving rituals. because there's two ways to grieve. The white man's way is you lay on the couch and they ask you questions, and usually they ask about your sex life, you know. it's a long, drawn-out, one-year-long ritual where everybody had to participate within the family. And we brought back our grieving ritual starting in 1985. And the way we did that was we went up to, it's about 230 miles north of us to Sitting Bull's camp. And we jumped on our horses and we rode all the way back to the death trail of Wounded Knee where our people were killed. And it provoked us to cry and heal. And then we learned our songs back again. And so since then we've been doing our own ways of purifying our blood. When you heal, if you're normal, you should have pure blood in you. No sicknesses, no ailments, no trauma. So we've been doing that. In 1973, there was only 5 Sundances around the whole world, secret. And today, there's over 1,000 Sundances. It's just growing because around the world, people are giving up on what they call religion. It's written in black and white, and I guess there's a God up there someplace. I've never seen him. But we brought back our ways, and ours is a spiritual way, real sophisticated. And it's really good for us. And so today, we're busting out from that conquered state of mind. And what we want is we have to move to certain areas at certain times of the year. And we need our treaty territories back. And the Lakota people, America has us written down as let thirsty savages will kill everybody. Well, that's the furthest from the truth. Simple interpretation of the word dad or your father means askere. I is your shoulder, and there is where you put your face on his shoulder. So if you need somebody to lean on, or somebody to cry to, or somebody to depend on, it's your dad. That's a real gentle name. I mean, how can I be a bloodthirsty savage with a title like that? So we are today, that's what we're doing, is we're bringing back our ways, and we have to do it in raw poverty, because we can't get paid for doing it, which is probably okay. But today, we just want our treaty honored. In 1998, my wife's grandfather was Chief Red Cloud. She comes from the Red Cloud Band. And talk about extremes, I come from the Oyukpe. And Crazy Horse was a member of our Oyukpe. We were the ones declared hostile. We never came into the reservations. We never accepted rations. So from being a hostile to a treaty signer, it was kind of real funny at times. But they had a meeting for 4 long years, and today we want to file genocide against the United States of America for what they did. They go around and fight other countries around the world for misdeeds when they don't even look at their own backyard. But here's the interesting part was, I went to United Nations, I went 3 times, and there's a second treaty seminar on treaties. And the United Nations said that the United States of America violated the treaty with the Sioux. And then I went to the 3rd seminar to ask for a request, and that was to get a consensus of over 800 nations around the world to support us to go to the World Court of Justice to file genocide against America. And I got it. We got it at the United Nations. And so I proceeded to go to Brussels, Belgium, where the World Court is. And first thing I wanted to do was research genocide. And I went to the library, and it's about a mile wide, that whole building. It's huge. And the people are real scary because they're different. They live there, and they live about world politics. But as I was standing there, this young man came up to me and said, "Can I help you in another language?" I said, I speak American. So he spoke English. So I told him I was there to research genocide, how to file genocide on the United States of America. And he says, "I'll save you time." And we went to this little section, and we sat down, and he said, "Every country in this world, after 1946 war with Germany, what they did with the Jews, every country in the world signed a pact to own up to their misdeeds in their countries. The only country who did not sign on to that pact was the United States of America. So you can't bring them here to the World Court of Justice. You can't take them to your Supreme Court. It's just covered." And so that's where I'm at today with that issue. And I've been pursuing that for close to 18 years now. And I just don't have the funds to go around the world. And
while I was doing that, I was real surprised when I came home, and one day I got a call from the United Nations, and it was Evo Morales from Bolivia. He wanted to meet me in New York at the United Nations. And he paid my way, paid my hotel. It's really expensive up there in New York. And what he wanted to know was, why are you doing that? So I said, well, Americans aren't really from here. They're trespassing in our original territories. And we want to bring back our way, and we want to live normal, like what they say is normal. And so he gave me an open invitation and directed to the ambassador, anything the Sioux want, you support them at the United Nations, because there was an ambassador at the United Nations that he had appointed to work with me. And then the other one was Chavez. His ambassador was appointed to support the Sioux. And we're not really Sioux, that's a label word from the Chippewa, they call us that. And so then there was from Iceland ambassador would sign on to that. And so our strategy was to hold a tribunal where we get five ambassadors from five countries to come here and hold a tribunal, and we would tell them, this is what happened. I don't speak my language. It's genocide. I'm getting diabetes from the water I drink because of mining. That's genocide. All these and that. These five ambassadors would write up the Genocide Act, and they would take it to the World Court of Justice. That's the strategy that we came to. And I did meet with Chavez and Evo Morales, but that's about as far as I got. And I just ran out of gas, and my wife, all our activism, I found it through my Social Security check. And then I used to have a buffalo and horse ranch here, so little at a time we've been selling our resources, and we brought it this far, but I'm close to 70 now, and I'm just kind of running out of gas, and I have to pass it on to someone else to continue this on.
Ask them about growing as a hemp and what happened also during that same time frame.
Yeah, our treaty council, which is still dominant on our Indian reservation, they approved industrial hemp. They call it industrial hemp. In Lakota, it's called Wahupta Ska Prejuta. Anyway, so the tribal government that is recognized by the United States, it's a bill in Congress, they passed a law separating recreational marijuana, medical, to industrial hemp. Use it for CBD or housing or whatever. So 1998, I planted my first field, and of course it took me 2 years to learn how to be a farmer because I'm a warrior status. I'm not really a farmer, you know, so I had to learn those traits. And here in 2000, DEA and FBI, U.S. Marshals, sheriffs, I was surrounded by 40 different police-type people, and they held us off, and they stole our crop, but they didn't charge me. They didn't make no charges, so we said, well, they're just thieves. They stole our crop, you know, and there's no way we could run into wherever federal building they went to hide our stuff and find it and get it back. It was just too ridiculous. So we grew it again in 01, and then in 02, my family and I were the only ones around the whole world that have a lifetime restraining order never to grow hemp. That's what the United States did to us. And so it's been about a 16-year court, and what they did was they didn't charge me criminally. If they charged me criminal with marijuana, I would have been in the Supreme Court within 3 years, and the reserve rights doctrine, which we have, which the Supreme Court is supposed to lean in our favor because we're original people here, I would have had that settled in 3 years, but the United States attorneys all strategized, and they sued me civilly with 8 criminal counts, and so I had to go through the civil way, which totally wiped out my ranch, and I don't have no more buffaloes, no more horses. My ranch is just like a graveyard now. So we went through that, and then finally, when Trump got in, my court case went to St. Louis, Missouri, and the 8th Court of Appeals, they said that there's a marijuana form and there's a industrial hemp form, but can change the laws, but they used that to Trump signed the legislation legalizing industrial hemp across the country today, and also the district court rescinded its original charge of growing marijuana and all that stuff. So today I don't have no more federal charges, but I have to go through the USDA, I guess, it's finally legalized. But that was our experience with trying to grow a natural plant, and I was going to make some toilet paper with Trump's face on it. I thought it'd be real awful. I'm just kidding.
Alex, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What does men, I mean, because, you know, they say the sacred hoop was broken at Wounded Knee during the time of the massacre. What does mending the hoop mean to you as a Pine Ridge, as a Lakota man?
That's what we're doing now. We're rebuilding the nation. So we send our young people on that horseback ride journey to go from Sitting Bull Camp to Wounded Knee, and they cleanse themselves, they purify their blood so they can take on a huge task of purifying themselves, and so that we can take actions of revitalizing their culture. And like I said, in 1973, Orville Looking Horse started his gun dance. In 1973, during the Aim and Gun War, and then in 1974, Luke Two Dog started his gun dance here on Pine Ridge. And then in 1975, Crow Dog started his gun dance on the Rosebud Reservation. And we already had three here on the Pine Ridge Reservation, so that brought six of our ceremonies being performed around the whole world. And that was in 1975. And today, like I said, there's sun dancing going on every place, and we don't really appreciate that, because if you're not Lakota, you don't speak the language, how can you interpret the meaning of that ceremony? So, but we brought back our rituals are being practiced, all seven of them are being practiced today. So rebuilding our nation, we give it. And now, we just need America to look at its backyard and say, hey, we have to own up to our misdeeds, just like every other country in the world. We give along with a lot of nations. They come here, and like I said earlier, we were the last nation to be contacted. So our language, our ceremonies were real. We still speak our language here. And so the ones that had 500 years contact, they were rubbed out. But they came to us to learn our ceremonies, our vision quest, to give away all the meanings, everything. And we go home, and they have vision quest, and they bring back their culture. So that's what happened to most of the ones that had 500 years contact. So we actually were saving a lot of people by just being ourselves. There are many allies across the nation from all other nations, and we allowed them to use our ceremonies to bring back their songs and their ways. So we're real friendly, and we get along with everybody, and we're bringing back the way, their way, too.
Tell them what happened on June 25th. I think that they should hear how you are.
Oh, yeah. About 32 years ago, my wife and I, we live on the land, and we turned inward towards our family. We didn't want to fall off in that melting pot no more. So we resisted that, and we teach our own children. We have our own school, and we're bringing back our ceremonies. One of the things my wife said was, we've got to celebrate a victory day. Whenever you see the President of the United States make a press release, you see behind him all of those battle streamers. It's a staff with a whole bunch of ribbons hanging. If you ever look at that closely, you'll see a yellow ribbon. And that yellow ribbon represents the war they lost with the Lakota at the Little Bighorn. Little Bighorn, we defeated the United States military in open combat. And so that's what that battle streamer represents. That yellow represents our victory. So we celebrate that every year on June 25th. This year it's going to be on a Wednesday. And we tell the origin stories about the Little Bighorn, what happened, who was there, who actually killed Custer. And there's a real popular misconception that Custer was standing on the hill, and it's called Last Stand Hill. And he was shooting Indians, and for some reason his pistol had about 1,000 rounds and never ran out of bullets. But he was killed last. That's the popular American romantic story about their story. They told it that way. But we know it different. The one who killed Custer was a guy called Red Hawk. He's buried just a half mile from my house here. And what he told was that they chased Custer. He welcomed his troops. He abandoned them. He ran for his life. He cried for his life. He cried for mercy. He cried for life. But they killed him anyway. And so there's no such thing as a last stand here. So on that day, we celebrate a Victory Day celebration. And, oh, we brag something awful, because in Lakota mythology, you're not supposed to brag, you're supposed to be humble and be true to yourself. And, but that day, it's legal, so oh, we brag something awful. It's 18 different race events that we, or traditional race events that, oh, we celebrate something awful. And I laughed so hard, my jaws and my stomach hurt for a couple of days afterwards.
Everyone is invited.
Yeah, everyone's invited to participate with us. In the beginning, we just did it with our children because we wanted our children to be Lakota and not be influenced by the Americanism. So we were selfish, but now our children are all grown up. They have their own families. They know who they are, and they know how far to go. And we send our children to school today to learn to socialize, but we don't want them to learn about the American government. You know, we have a Mount Rushmore here in South Dakota in the Black Hills on our sacred site. And the first one is Washington. And he's the one who issued a $5 bounty on Indian scalps. In 1776, $5 was like $500 today. It was a lot of money. So people killed children, women, grandparents, everybody just to get their scalps. So that's Washington's legacy. And he's sitting right here in the center of our Black Hills. It makes me angry. And then there's Abraham Lincoln. He hung the 38 Dakotas, the largest Indian hanging in the world at that time. And that's his legacy. And there's a guy named Roosevelt that's called Manifest Destiny. If you're white, you're right. The tribal mass must be crushed. So they took the people from the East Coast and brought them all up to the Indian nations in Oklahoma. So those presidents all committed acts of genocide, but Americans still come here and they cherish that history. And I think that's sickening. I think that's just awful that they have the wrong state of mind to do that and feel that way. And all of these people are so Christian, they're so godlike, so holy. When they come out of the church on a Sunday, they should come out with tears in their eyes for the atrocities they committed against us. But they don't even think about it. They don't even care about it. And that's kind of a weird type of people that I don't really care to associate too much with.
Hi, hi. Alex, can I ask you a question? What about the, I mean, everybody talks about the chief Sitting Bull, but as I learned from, you know, studying Musa Meredith Quinn, he actually was the chief of the Clan Mother. I think it was She Who Only Speaks Once. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between patriarchy and the original way of life?
Yeah, in our way of living, our sophisticated way of living was the weakest ones were always protected. And our women were the first ones on this world. The word for woman is called Wea. You guys remember that word, Wea, which means the rock that lives forever. It's just the earth that we live on was nothing but female here. And at times, there were animals were growing up, even our origin stories. And different animals are growing up, the dinosaurs were awful people, and so they needed protection and they wanted help, and matriarchs, when they're pure, they can communicate with spirits just like we're talking, and so they ask for support, for somebody to come and help them. So from the stars, we were sent here from the stars as a man, we call it Chasha, which means the gift star. So we were sent here to protect our women, to provide and take care of them. So while we're matriarchal, from the word goes, women are the ones that own this earth. They know how to take care of it. They don't want to hurt her. So we're matriarchal, and that's how I grew up. My wife was a real stern matriarch, and I just loved her so much. She's just strong. I love strong women because they stand for something. And so we're matriarchal, and I love that system. And they don't disrespect you as a man. If you're a real man, if you're wise, if you have wisdom, you live your life of experience, and you say just the truth, then it's a natural respect that the matriarchs give to us men. So that we're matriarchal, and that doesn't mean we're a caveman or we're going to live in caves. We have a real beautiful way of life. And there's a story at one time where the earth went on fire because they were destroying, people that lived here before us were destroying the earth. And they said that the men were giants, 15, 20 feet tall. And they lived here, they could take down a dinosaur to eat of it. And they're the ones who destroyed the first world. And so today, we have to live in a way where that don't happen again. And that's our thought philosophy. But we can't stop it with all this mining and
uranium is awful, awful. It took thousands of years to bury that so we could breathe again. And we're bringing it back above the earth again to destroy us again. It's just ridiculous how the consumerism and capitalism is just not good for our matriarchal system and to protect the natural earth.
Can I ask you another question? I know this is a year, this is actually your year of mourning. Can you speak some more about Winnie Aunt Deborah's accomplishments and honor her?
Yeah, Deborah challenged the biggest uranium mining company in the world. We didn't know they were the biggest ones. She just seen them as destroying our water. They're 50 miles from where I live. It's where they call Crow Butte Uranium Mine. They're bringing uranium on, and their disposal of their dirty water was going into our creek called White River and Cheyenne River, and those flows through my, I just live 19 miles from the Cheyenne River and the White River, and so we were getting diabetes, we were dying of cancer, other different diseases that we never knew about that was caused from that uranium mine. But it took her 27 years, and she shut the uranium mining down here in Nebraska. And but at the same time, she was connected to many women around the world. They organized and they worked together as a working group. And I think in Germany today, it's 75% going to wind and solar, and Sweden is 100%. They all stopped the uranium mining, and they went back to a more using the sun, which is safer. So this is a world effort that she started, and she accomplished it. So. There's so much stockpiles of uranium already. Why are they still digging? They got enough for 200 years towards the future. Why are they still doing that? And it all boils back down to capitalism.
Mining, and we also shut down the Keystone XL pipeline, which was coming through our treaty territory. And over 1,000 lakes and streams that would cross. And if that pipeline burst on one of those, it would damage the whole water and the whole Midwest system. So we shut that down, and Trump brought it back on, but then Biden just shut it back down, so we're so thankful for it. There's a wise man out there in America, and maybe that's Biden, I don't know.
What do you think needs to happen with Windgate? Can you talk about that? That's so horrible. That's so...
With what?
With Windcave and the uranium. The emergence place, Windcave.
Yeah, Windcave is the origin. They went and I guess they investigated over 5,000 miles of caves, and that's our origin, that's our original homeland. There was a time in our life where we couldn't breathe the air, so we had to go deep within Mother Earth, and that's where the water is appears. That water comes from where the dinosaurs were here, and the air is clean under there. And so we lived under there, and we ate roots and different animals that lived under the earth. And there was a time when the earth was clear enough where we could breathe. And we went with the trees. Our trees are relatives. They're a messenger. And when they started growing, we knew it was safe. So we came above the earth. But Wind Cave is one of our origins. That's our very first origin. Was from the Wind Cave, and it's from the Black Hills.
And what's in Wind Cave now? What if they put... It's contaminated with uranium. Is it
yeah,
not?
Today.
And is that not how you, in the origins when the buffalo led the people out from Wind Cave, right? And that's why you're the buffalo nation.
We didn't follow them out. We all came together.
Ah.
But that was a story written by some archaeologist.
Oh.
I don't like those ologists. They think you're smart, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Although being a gynecologist might be a good...
You're so funny. So have you started your seed swapping yet?
No, I usually wait till end of May, because in April we get our last blizzard.
Yes.
The normal way, but we don't know if it's going to happen. So I always plant the first week in May when we have 8 hours and 55 minutes of sunlight.
Yeah.
Today we just topped 8 hours. Of sunlight, so it's hard to grow anything, but you gotta have 8 hours and 55 minutes of hot sunlight for all grass to come to life and grow, so.
Okay.
So in June, I'll organize some of our local speakers and some of our holy people, and there's no such thing as a medicine man, so don't believe somebody when you say he's a medicine man.
Right, right. What are the dates? Oh, it's June 1st. June 25th.
June 25th.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a week or a couple days or
3 days of activities. One day is dedicated just to Hemp. The second day is for the children, and the third is the real race day. That's real intense and real exciting. But I got to remind you of your blonde. We still do a blonde because Custer was blonde, you know.
How many acres are up there right now?
On the whole reservation, there's 84,000 acres of agricultural land that has good water. But our hemp is just coming out. And last year, there's 35 permits given by the tribe. And only myself and the lady from Wounded Knee were the only ones that had success because we... You know, when you farm, it's a 10-hour a day, every day, 7 days a week work to farm. You just can't plant them and forget about them. You got to be there with them. So hard work.
Yeah, I'm a, Alex knows, I grew hemp here the last 3 years, and you're up at 6 and to bed at 10, and it's full time. And in fact, I'm sitting here spinning hemp while we're talking, because I'm doing weaving.
Uh-huh. I'm the type of guy that plants the seed. And I push other people to the forefront to do it. So that was my success. That's why I'm so successful today.
And that is the portion most of an amazing conversation with my brother, Alex Lightbloom of Keysa Park. And I want to encourage everyone who hasn't yet to go back and listen to this past Saturday's Mending the Hoop Count Hour. We focus on the evolving birth and implementation of the Geronimo Hemp Plan under the stewardship, the vision of the returned Geronimo and Cochise in one, the man I'm very thankful to call the chief financial officer of the White Buffalo Nation, Will Pillow. And also, it looks like with everything we've listened to so far, we're not going to have time this program to hear the second part of Victor Duville, the Star Knowledge Keeper, and the husband of the matriarch of Rosebud, his wife, who I send best regards to, and hope that everyone at Cinta Gleska and in my beloved Rosebud as well. I so do love Rosebud. And but I bring up last week's program because, you know, there's two halves to the program, and we have 20 minutes left. And I mentioned and read the letter I wrote for Brother Leonard Peltier. And I know, and I have invited the daughter of the matriarch of the missing and murdered Indigenous movement, whose name brings tears to my heart, the ever-beloved Annie Mae Pictou. When I lived for a year in South Dakota, I was on a mission for Unjimaka and Great Spirit, listening to she for whom I live, the one they call the White Buffalo Cat Woman, so that I would speak words that she wanted spoken. And the brave Chief Gary Rowland, the direct descendant and the incarnation of Chief Fire Lightning, he looks just like he did in that time when he lived again as Chief Gary Rowland, thanks to whom I am a proud member of Wounded Knee AIM and a proud member of AIM. And so back to my sister, my Unchi, Annie Mae Pictou. When I was living in Wounded Knee People didn't know who I was. I came carrying a card identifying me as a Free Nations ambassador and UN observer, and I tell everyone I don't report to the UN, which I know was founded by some people who roasted my relatives in Europe, and not with jokes. So I am not very fond of some of the founders of the United Nations, although I do appreciate the unity. So be that as it may, I went out to Treaty Council at Chief Gary Rowland's invitation after meeting he and Pearl Means and Phyllis Young, who came to our Saturday Standing with Standing Rock, Savage Sovereignty and Water Protectors Council, of which this Mending the Hoop program is a continuation of official meetings of the White Buffalo Nation Division Council. Back to Annie Mae and me. So here I am, and I'm living at Wounded Knee. Sometimes I'm living up at Chief Gary's house with my nieces and my nephews, and a couple of horses and many goats. The ghosts at Wounded Knee come out at night. Sometimes they hang like mist. Anyway, Chief Gary and Chief Swallow and Chief Crow Dog, and I believe with the approval of Chief Looking Horse, we wanted to bring the seven council fires, which had assembled Standing Rock, meaning the government, the true original government of the Americas. The fires were lit. All of the Teoshpeha, all across Turtle Island, were represented. Indeed, Chief Geronimo Thomas was asked to be one of the seven sworn on behalf of his grandfather, who lives through his grandson, who is the living root of that tree. Let's be. In any case, no one knew who I was. If you look at me on Facebook, you'll see that I have a page called Rainbow Madonna. And as I told a brother today, the reason I hold that title because I have adopted all those relatives who have dropped out, have tried to find a different path, an alternative, because we stand at the crossroads, relatives, as Chief Arwal often said. We're at the V in the road, and someone like me, who represents Unchimaka and Wankantanka, may be standing there at the crossroads and ask you to choose the path to life and not the path to death. No, the time to choose. So back to Annie Mae and me. So here I am, living at Wounded Knee, first in Gary's house in the living room on a mattress, along with his son and his beloved and all of the children. Very happy time. And sometimes I move down to the camp that is below the church, burned down. Thank goodness. I don't mean to be unkind, but when we were attempting to bring the seven council fires back to Wounded Knee for the mending of the hoop and the healing of the earth typical prophecy, and I was living in my tent next to my sister Chitka Weon's house, where she and her children and her nine grandchildren live in the field below the Holocaust Museum, the round building with the beautiful paintings of Russell Mean and of Chief Fire Lightning and of Sitting Bull and other great ones. Those whose faces live in the mountains and would never carve their face into the living rock. In any case, all of the chiefs had agreed to come and bring the teepees and set up, as had been done at the Standing Rock. And we had the kitchen. We had Jean-Louis Bourgeois donated, I believe it was $1,500, so we could feed everyone. And then the grumbling started from the goons, Church on the Hill. The same goons who in the 1970s were going out as an armed police militia in collusion with the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the Black Pope, the Vatican, and Lucifer, and the hordes of hell themselves. As good as my witness, I do not exaggerate. Well, they couldn't have that happen, could they? They couldn't have the hoop mended. That would mean they had lost power. So what did they start to do? Well, you can ask Paiute Harris, the creator of the Mazacoin, who is our chief operating officer, potentially, hopefully. He shares vision with Chief Geronimo and I in the operations of the sovereign nation of positive prophecy being fulfilled, known as the White Buffalo Nation, which is the shield of the White Buffalo calf women and the peacemaker, who work and honor the highest truths of all paths, short of human and animal sacrifice, who sit peacefully with those such as the Dalai Lama and all the true spiritual leaders, white, black, yellow, red, here and in the stars, where we are the star nation. In any case, such a good thing was happening. We had, Chief Gary and I had driven all the way from Wounded Knee to Rapid City to visit with his beloved, respected brother, Chief Leonard Crow Dog. Much best wishes to Chief Leonard. I hear he is still with us. Stay with us, Chief Leonard. Much respect, much love. In any case, we had gone to see Chief Leonard. We had gotten his blessings, Dave Swallow. We went to his land to look at teepees. Everything was moving forward. Gary and I were coming back from Rapid City with food for the camp. I had was prepared to set up my tent down in the field by the tree where I could look up at the hillside and see the grave where I had tied prayer for the men, women, and children murdered in cold blood in the snow. Whose ghost came out that day when Gary and I got back and were waiting for us. It started after we picked up the food. The phone calls came, the threatening phone calls that told Gary that if he proceeded with lighting the fires, that something was going to happen and he would go to jail or end up dead. And we went and sat at a place I never saw, but this is a brave man. This is a man who jumped out of airplanes. This is a man who went with Chief, with Russell Means and Phyllis Young to establish the Republic of Lakota. He was afraid. He was afraid. And then they started talking about me on Facebook I think I was called a white bitch who was controlling Gary Rowland, and a rainbow, a dirty rainbow, which is kind of funny. You know, it used to be the word nigger was the word that was used to insult people. It didn't matter if you were white, black, yellow, red. Now it's been rehabilitated, and if you call somebody, hey, nigga, and even if you're white, you're cool, right? Hey, nigga, you're gangster. Well, now the insult is, you know, dirty rainbow hippie. And, you know, because I have my Rainbow Madonna page. So I wasn't worried about that, although my sister Morning Light, who was helping vocalize donations, was literally getting death threats. And then here's where we circle to Annie Mae and why I so relate to and love Annie Mae. So they started attacking Gary, and he got scared, and he and everybody swallow, everybody, nothing was coming to camp. They were up on the hillside at the church. We had camp. We had Felipe Chavez came. Thank you, Felipe, from Kitty Village. Paiu came, Janice Stone, and others. I forget of Paiu's Mazacoin crew. And what did they do? We got back, and Gary was shook, and he went to bed. And Feather and I, his niece, went down to check on the camp, and the ghosts were out. The mist was hanging in the air. It was palpable. The ghosts were out, and sure enough, we drove my white Sedona van, Feather and I love you, Feather, to the camp on Dorothy's land and Clarence Rowland and Justin and Fallon's land. And that, I mean, it was like Fallon and I were like holding each other because, I mean, I'm sorry, Fallon, it was Feather who was with me. I think you were in the house. You were probably asleep. You and your sister and Clarence and Justin were probably in the house asleep that night. In any case, the only one up when we got there at the fire was Paiu. And he had on his bulletproof vest. And he was geared up. And why was Paiu geared up? Because the goon squad was beaming light at us from the church. Klieg light, like the ones the cops used at Standing Rock. They had the lights on us. And they were making noise. And they were trying to make everybody leave. And everybody was asleep except for Paiu. Was tending a fire, sitting in a lawn chair. Feather and I went and sat. I had my tent up, but I was very kind of, you could really feel the ghost, and I didn't really want to sleep in my tent. Anyway, we sat at the fire, and this very rational man, Paiu Harris, told us, as he was on fire watch, and Felipe was asleep, and Jana was asleep, everyone was asleep. It must have been, I don't know, it was late. It could have been 1, 2 in the morning when Gary and I got back from Rapid with all the supplies. And he said he had been asleep and the spirits had come to him. And I believed it because as soon as Gary and I drove into the down the hill to his driveway, the mist went across the windshield and I knew it was the spirits. It was like, oh my God. It's like, the spirits are out. So anyway, we sat there listening, knowing that the spirits were out and they had come to Paiu Harris in a dream. And they told Paiu that as long as they were in a mass grave with a church on the hillside, which was adding insult to injury, since they had been massacred in the name of a peacemaker by those who are not of his family at all. But that they had planned, that the spirits were unhappy, they had been not buried properly, and that until they were, that perhaps there may be no peace between today. And he was, you know, he was sitting in the armchair gripping the side because the dream was so vivid. And Feather and I listened, and he went back to tending the fire, and we got in my van, and we drove back up the hill to Gary Rowland's house and sat in the front seat of the van because the mist of the spirits were so strong around the house. And finally, we were brave enough to run in the house and went to bed. The spirit, Annie Mae. So back to Annie Mae and me. So Gary had gotten intimidated. I was living at Wounded Knee. I had brought the teachings of Meredith Quinn Musa back to the knee about the matriarchs, about the white buffalo calf woman being still the matriarch of the Ocheti Sakowin, and that she is back because she fulfilled prophecy when Miracle was born in 1994 and changed. In any case, the rumors started flying hard that I was a Fed, that because I was a UN observer, I was actually a Fed. And that is where we get back to Annie Mae. Annie Mae Pictou was targeted by the FBI in collusion with the goons. She was a very popular woman, because she was very beautiful and spirit lived through her, spirit lived through me. When they would arrest people from Wounded Knee, get their hands on them, they started letting Annie Mae go. And they let it, they built the narrative that Annie Mae Pictou was a federal agent. I'm sorry, but in the middle of the war, I don't care if you're Mata Hari or Agent 99 or whatever secret agent. If you're in a war and you're a spy and you're captured, you may face the death squad. I am not defending what happened. I think it needs to be addressed privately in the Red Nation. But suddenly I was being accused of being a Fed. And my sister, Cheska Nguyen, told me not to drive alone. And that is all that I will say tonight on the subject of missing and murdered Indigenous women. I am going to close this out with a clear running stream. Thank you. This has been Siava Gardner with Mending the Hoop, Special Words That Need to Be Healed, a recorded, archived meeting of the White Buffalo Nation Vision. And so to all my missing and murdered Indigenous women, men, and children, including my relatives who died in the gas chambers. We are here. We are no longer victims. We are victors. We are warriors. And we work for good. All my relations. Live Mending the Loop Council, the Vision Council, co-hosted by myself, Chief Geronimo, and Grandmother Marge. Doksha.